Oh, that was quick. Anything else y'all want to read here? I already completed my talk on the way up here, so I'm not sure what's going to happen now. It's an hour and a half drive. I'd like to thank Billy for somehow getting me up here. Billy's not here. Thank you, Billy. I understand there's supposed to be a woman up here tonight. So evidently Billy needs to keep coming back. I do know he's in Texas, and I know he's going to AA meetings because I know Billy. I see him at least probably once a week. Anyway, my name is Sage. I'm an alcoholic. And all I can tell you is what happened from the beginning, and I'll try to do that the best that I can. I haven't been known to be able to stay in a chronological order always, so I'm not sure what's going to happen tonight. But, you know, with the help of a loving God, the 12 steps, and good sponsorship, and a lot of A meetings, I haven't found it necessary to change my sobriety date, which is February 24th, 1998. And there's been some things that I've had to do in order to keep that, though. I noticed that on the church. I think I noticed it a while back. I was here. The cornerstone out there says 1998. So, because I've been in sobers as long as this church has been here, which has nothing to do with anything except that cornerstone out there. Anyway, I thought of it the last time I was here. I think I was asked to come here some years back. And so anyway, you know, what happened to me in the very beginning was I had a good start in AA. And I didn't have a clue what AA was really about when I first was exposed to it. I was in the back of the days of DUIs. That's in my late teens, and so I had some exposure, but I don't recall anything, pretty much. I remember having to go, I had to drive, I guess it was the ASAP class, I had to drive probably 45 minutes, or hitch a ride, I guess, I don't remember, and go to these, I don't know what they were classes, I guess, that they required you to take the courts mandated me, and it was probably, I really don't know how many meetings I was required to go to, but I remember having to go down to Saluda, which is in Middlesex County. I grew up, about 100-some miles east of here in Westmoreland County. And so anyway, I remember going down there, and I knew everything. You know, I got an A in my drug class, you know, in phys ed, and you know, they're giving me some different look at alcohol and drugs, et cetera. And I remember that I always remembered in my class, or at least in my phys ed class, that the question I got wrong was having to do with whether alcohol was a depressant or a stimulant. And at that age, I'd already experienced or had experimented with just about everything there was. And so I was quite familiar with all the drugs. And I usually stayed away from certain kinds as I grew up. But I always believed that it was a stimulant. So I got that one wrong on the test, because outside of AA, they look at it as a depressant. And I remember at 13 years old, and maybe sometime younger than that, that I never was depressed after drinking alcohol. Not me. Maybe some folks were. Maybe I've heard it. But I've never been depressed from drinking. I think it's the greatest thing for depression. It's great for increasing excitement, which I always wanted. And I didn't know that for a long time. I remember in the first grade, I had some characteristics that were, identify as I became more sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, if there's any such a thing. But I was always conscious, or at least I was always afraid of what everybody thought of me. And it started a whole lot earlier than I ever imagined. And the longer I've been sober, the more I see that. When I walked up to the front of the teacher's desk to carry a paper or whatever, I remember always worried about what I had on and what the cow lick was doing, and whether it all looked right and whether they recognized the hand-me-downs or not. I had two older brothers. And, you know, I really never had a problem with hand-me-downs, actually. Most of the time, everything's too big anyway, whether it's bought new or if it's old. You know, pants cuffs I had to roll up all the time. Winter boots never fit. You know, all my pants were, you know, had to be altered. Shirts were okay. But anyway, I was always afraid of people. And it was, you know, till I was older and in AA before I understood why I felt that way. And so anyway, as I went through grade school or elementary school, I wasn't, well, I'm quite a bit taller than I was in elementary school, and so that just added to it. And I used to hang around with the guys there. Most of my friends were, you know, 6 feet tall, and or better. But anyway, I felt comfortable around those because we acted up and we thought we were cool, and we learned how to smoke at a young age, and learned how to cuss, you know, really good, and tell all the dirty jokes, and how to, you know, get away with it in the bathroom in elementary school. And so that gave me some, you know, gave me something to work with. I had some satisfaction with that. I was also the teacher's pet. Not all the time, but in certain classes, the one that I like, I was always the teacher's pet. I would behave in a good fashion in order to have the comfort I was looking for being around a bunch of people. Now, when I get into the class where I'm inferior, I don't feel good enough or I'm not smart enough, then I have to compensate. And that's where I got into my smart aleck class clown act. And so I was a class clown too. And I was a good student up till about the fourth grade, if I remember. I remember my report cards. I think I got rid of them while I was in the middle of my drunken years, you know. Maybe because I was bothered. You know, I was really mad. I wish I hadn't done that because I would have loved to have seen the teacher's comments. I remember a lot of them, you know, up to around the fourth grade. But I know somewhere around fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, I started to get into a little bit of trouble at school. Not where I had to be suspended, but my folks would find out a few things, just being a class clown, being caught by the teacher, etc. So anyway, I got through elementary school okay. But I was full of self-centered fear. I didn't know that was going to be described that way, but that's what I had. I'm absolutely terrified. And so everything I did to change how I felt was really an act. And so I'm an actor. Now I have two lives that I live by, and that's how I began. So this is long before I took a drink. I was already stealing. I was already telling lies. You know, I'd go into a little metal thing in a drawer at home, my mother's I had put there, and I'd get the change out. This is pre-drinking years. I remember telling lies, or I wouldn't own up to things that happened in the house, you know, like nearly catching the house on fire, you know, and denying it, you know. It's spontaneous combustion. That was my excuse for smoking in a storage room and accidentally somehow something smoldering and almost, well, it smoked the whole house up. And I absolutely lied, period. I wasn't going to own up to it. Just like everything else, I was never able to own up to anything. I never could. I don't want to admit that I'm wrong. That's the bottom line. So I live a lie. And so anyway, when I'm around in the seventh grade, there were four of us. I remember the faces right now. They're all good friends. They're not all alcoholics. I don't know if any of them are. I know one of them's not. My best friends, we would ride out and we'd have a couple drinks at the usual places, but he would always go home. I never could figure out why Johnny always wanted to go home. But anyway, so I had friends like that, and in the seventh grade, you know, prior to the seventh grade, I did have a few drinks of alcohol. I remember some mystique around alcohol and some attraction having to do with alcohol. I remember that. I remember my uncles and aunts in the summertime, you know, playing the ukulele and the homemade bass thing out of a wash drum and a clothesline and a broomstick. And they had, I remember, somebody who had Black Label. I still remember that can and some of the, all the rock guts, really, what I call rock gut later on. It was Pabst Blue Ribbon, and that's probably all they had that I can remember. I'm only 4 years old. I remember this. I remember getting a bath at 3 1/2 in a sink. And at this cottage while my dad was building a house. And I remember when they, that night, at nights, they would all be on the screen porch and they're having a lot of fun. There's a lot of drinking. And I remember getting sips of beer. So I was attracted to it. As I grew up later, I was attracted to all the TV shows that, you know, they rattled the ice cubes, you know, all the actors like Clint, all the cool guys, you know, they drink it and they wouldn't even shiver, you know, they give me another one. And I kind of wanted to be like that, kind of. I wanted to be tough when I drank. And so all that was in the background. And in the seventh grade, plus anything that's not allowed by the folks or the parents, you know, I want to try it. You know, it's just something fun about that for me. And then in seventh grade, I had my most significant drink all at one time. And it was about 2 or 3 ounces of, could have been Jack Daniels or something like that. But anyway, it was in a Listerine bottle. It was 4 of us. When it got to me, I had my 2 1/2 shots or whatever it was. And I felt that hot glow. I'd never had that before. I had this hot glow. Probably never really drank hard liquor. Had this hot flash that went right down here and then just kind of came right back up. And just my whole head just heated right up and just felt good. That's all I remember. Just felt good. I didn't have anything else happening in my mind that I'm aware of. It just felt good. I remember it. Just a nice hot flash, like almost like you're going to faint. And so that's the seventh grade. Don't remember the next time I took another drink. It wasn't like that. But I remember when I left the elementary school, went to a junior high school for 8th grade and 9th grade. You know, I went to a private school, 10, 11, and 12, college preparatory school, where they prepared me for college, and they did. I don't have time to tell this whole story. Anyway. So in the 8th grade, I started to experiment a little bit more, and it was mostly on the weekends, like football games, and that allowed me to get out of the house. I had the excuse to get out of the house from my parents. You know, I want to get out, so I go to the football game. That's the excuse, and there's certain times I need to be back, and I could pull that off early on. And we'd hang out with the boys and do what we do, and that's to sneak out during the game and drink a little bit, and just to have some fun. I was just doing what all kids I thought did at that age, and kind of like going along with the Joneses, you know. And so that's what I did. 9th grade, same thing. 10th grade, I went to a private school. That's a little tougher to drink there. And it's a dry county, or it's a 3-2 beer at best. And then it was a dry county on Sunday, which I didn't like as I got to be an upperclassman. That's where I started to have some real troubles drinking, or at least it started showing up. And I got suspended from that school for 3 days for having alcohol on campus, and they caught me with 5 beers on the bed, and they missed the 2 cases on the other side, and probably the other 3 that were snuck in and were redistributed there. And that was on a Wednesday night. That's when we made our move, on Wednesday night. It came up through the, I was on the first floor, it came up the window in the laundry sack, and then it was on the bed with an army blank on it, and then as the guys came in and got their beer, we got away with it till on the train, when the door was open one time, one of the staff, head resident, whatever, came in the room and only saw the 5 beers, and so I got off lucky. And I was suspended for 3 days, and that's, you know, where I began a long list of embarrassing moments for my folks that I gave them. I handed them right into the lap. My father was an attorney in a small town where I lived, and where it's where everybody knows everything that goes on. And you know, by the time I got in this private school, I'd already been pulled out from underneath the water tower in that town, passed out by my father's partner, law partner, and put in my mother's car. And that's only at 16 years old. I like going to the coffee house and get drunk because I'm not comfortable around girls, and I'm afraid to ask them to dance, and I can't dance anyway. But sometimes right the last few minutes I could. But anyway, that's what I did. Just absolutely terrified of people, unless I was drinking. So anyway, I'm in private school, and more trouble. My dad can't bail me out of that one, but I got lucky the next time at that private school. I was going back to school on a Sunday. I was an upperclassman, so I could drive. I had my mother's car. And we were horsing around and on the way back to school. And you can't buy beer in that county on Sunday. What a letdown. And there's a subdivision probably 30, 40 minutes from that private school. I'd never been there. We're just riding. But we did find our way down to the water. We know what to look for. Cottages. And there were no folks staying in these cottages. And so we went down there and entered some of the cottages. Usually by pushing the screen door open, and then there, you know, we'd lean a little bit harder, but no, really, we didn't have to pick any locks or anything. I hadn't advanced that far along the way yet. And what we're after is some beer. And so we got beer, and we started to take some things. And when the next day, when we realized that we'd taken everything we already really had on campus, I thought I needed another fan just to blow the dope smoke out of the window. And some more cushions and pillows, and some of the other guys thought they needed this, that, and the other. And to make it short of, we got caught. And the next day I heard somewhere the dean wants to see me in his office, and I know it's bad. I don't really know what it is, but I know it's bad. If you go to the dean's office, it's bad. And my father's there, and he's got a briefcase, or he's got some papers, he's got something in his hand. And I go in there, and they say, well, I want you to tell me all you know about Piankatang Shores Subdivision. Oh, God. So, you know, when you get that kind of direct question, you know, the only thing I know what to do is give the direct answer. And so I told them what happened, and there were some two or three others involved. We were all in the same school. And what happened was I found out what making amends or what restitution was long before I ever was sober. My dad knew about that kind of thing, and most of society knows about that. When you make a mistake like that, you have to fix it. And by the stroke of luck, my dad knew these folks, or somehow knew this person, or knew somebody in that area, because normally most people have been locked up for that, I assure you. There was damage, et cetera, and missing items, and what happened was we got all the stuff together and returned it, and we divided all the restitution for the damage, and got off lucky. Another really strong embarrassment for my dad, and for me and my mother. I graduate from that school. Well, I don't think any more drinking problems as far as being caught. I continued to drink, and we had a special night during the week where $3 would, we didn't drink anything, but we'd take these little clear things, these little small tablet things, and they were wonderful when you don't have any alcohol. So that's how I used everything else. It's a substitute for me. I drank and smoked dope and did dope from 1969 until 1998. And I'm just an alcoholic. I had some help with that when I got here through a good sponsor. But anyway, I graduated from that school and went to Madison College. It was before it was JMU. And I'd gone to a great school, private school, because when I got there the first year, it was all repeat. So I didn't even go to class, period. I played foosball and pool. Played a lot of foosball before I went to college. I played a lot in college, and I played a lot after college, because that's about the only thing I can do while I'm drinking and smoking dope, that I was good at it. And I didn't have to pay for any foosball or much beer. I did bring my own dope most of the time. But while my wife, or all my wives, different wives, sat out there and danced while I'm over here having my own little fun. That's how it was. I thought that's the way you're supposed to live here. But anyway, God, I wish I never grew up. I'm not sure I really have. Anyway, so I go to college, and you know, my dad always said, well, you know, I've always, you know, if you want to get an education, I said, I'll help you help pay for it. But, so anyway, I didn't take him up on that. I wish I had. I didn't know the importance of having an education. I thought I knew everything and knew what I wanted to do, and I'll take care of everything on my own steam. And I always felt like I was punished when I went to private school. All my brothers and sisters went to private school. Nearly everybody, my friends, they went to a private school. It was all for education. I thought it was just because I was just couldn't measure up, I guess. And I was just a totally terrible perspective on what things were really real. In other words, I have a warped perception, and I didn't know that. I always have a different look and a different take, and it's never accurate. And I found that out when I came to AA. I like what is described here as a disease of perception. I just don't perceive things very well without AA. That's the key there, is AA will clear that up for me. But anyway, I get through, I get out of college, and I go back and forth to community college where I lived, and becomes quite a blur in my drinking. The only way I can remember things is maybe a picture of a vehicle I had, so I know I had a 1980 truck, and I have little bits and pieces. To be honest with you, it's a lot of blur. It's a lot of drinking and a lot of fun, absolute furious fun. Coupled with extreme hangovers beyond my imagination. I used to have these splitting headaches that would just, I don't know, I'd have 2 or 3 days of not doing anything. Can't sleep, don't feel well, don't eat. Maybe I can smoke a little dope after 3 days. I'm on the way, clearing this thing up. And I did that for the most of the 29 years. The first half of my drinking was absolutely fun for me. I didn't mind getting the DUIs. I'm just a smart aleck, and it got me nowhere. I would do things like I would tell people I'm all right to drive, you know, and I'd get into my mother's car after he drops me off, and I go the wrong direction and rear end the car, and there's two kids in the car, and the car's buckled up to the back seat, and luckily no one's injured. Everybody may be slightly injured, but nothing serious. And I'm the clown who smart mouths the police. You know, did it every time. I can't think of an instance where I didn't smart mouth him. I vaguely remember this one. I was had a blood alcohol content of 0.32. And I do remember having his hat on and directing traffic after I'd gotten out of his car. And it's a little different later in my drinking. They do handle you a little bit different, but back then it was a little different. And I had a nickname for this guy. I didn't make it up. It was Babyface Riley. And he just looked like Babyface Riley, short and stocky. And so I let him know that. When he finally got me back in his car, we had a 30-minute ride to the hospital to get my blood test. Yeah, first of all, I told him, don't you know who I am? And I think that's the first time I found out that doesn't work. And so anyway, he gets me back in his car, takes me to Tappahannock, has my blood test, and then I have to face the real world. That's the next morning. Like I said, my dad's an attorney. My dad doesn't take my case like that. I don't ask either. Now with a blood alcohol content of 0.32, you have no defense. I had no defense the next time, and the next time, and the next time. I thought I drove very well while I was drinking. For the most part, I did. I just don't drive very well in a blackout, because that's when I wreck. All the vehicles I wreck are in a blackout. That's 3 or 4 of them. And I don't know how nobody's really, really hurt. I assure you, my folks were bothered, especially my mother. I tortured my mother every night, kept her up in the wee hours of the morning every night. I didn't know that. I was confronted by my dad one time, said, Sage, you got to stop doing this to your mother. And I tried. And, I could come back an hour or two earlier, you know, like 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock, and I could sustain that. And then, you know, I time and time again would shame and embarrass my folks. And so anyway, then I tried to see, I told you it was getting foggy. I was a little foggy in this area. You can tell. I've been married twice. Actually, three times, but it's much difference when your wife is in AA and so are you. So that's been my great experience there. I didn't have such a good experience prior to AA in relationships. Never have. That's my weak point, relationships. You know, it's not necessarily all of our circumstances that make us alcoholic. As a matter of fact, none of them have anything to do with my circumstances, because when I came to AA, a lot of folks didn't have this or didn't have that, and I had this, and that didn't happen to me, therefore I'm not like you, and that wasn't the case. It's my relationship with alcohol that makes a difference here. That's how I identify it here. But anyway, so I would continue to keep my folks up at night and worry them to death. I would continue to get in trouble. I would, as I mentioned, I'd get married. I would get married twice. Just seems like that's what everybody else was doing. It just seemed like a good idea. But I don't remember asking, you know, I never asked to be married. I don't remember that. But I know I never bought any rings. I'm not proud of that, but boy, isn't that interesting, you know? A lot of people are shaking their heads out here. But anyway, they're all unsuccessful. They don't last very long when they find me out. But anyway, that's just what happened. And then I would start to have troubles with my health when it came to drinking. I'd been in the hospital once for 4 days, fed intravenously. Seemed like it was a good idea not to drink. I got that impression from the doctors, and it worked for 30 days. And I returned to drink again after about 30 days. At the time, I didn't understand why I would run a return to drinking. It felt pretty good not to drink for about 30 days. Felt really good after drinking that long and hard. But I didn't have a clue what was going on. I didn't know I was in the grips of a progressive illness. And my alcoholism continued even when I'd stopped drinking. I don't like stopping drinking when I was drinking. I could handle it from about 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon, because about 10 is when I'm on the mend. From 3:30 till 9:30 in the morning, I don't want any parts of that. I can't sleep. I don't feel good. I can't move. I can't stand any noise. I have to sit up in the bed with a pillow over my ears and just wait for hours for it to go away. And usually it was like that every day. Not every day, but a lot of days. And a funny thing happened by that evening. I would want to drink again. Just why in the world? I couldn't figure it out. Really wasn't interested in figuring it out. That's just the way it was. And I did that probably for the last 10 years of my drinking. What happened to me at the very end, it wasn't the very end, but in this small hometown I lived in, I was in the next umpteenth relationship, and I think I found myself chasing around in that county. I think I figured it out after I was sober about 5 years. I moved 13 times in Westmoreland County. I didn't go anywhere. I'd just be from one rental place to the next rental place. But I'm always employable. I always worked. I took pride in my work. I went to work nearly every day. If I didn't go to work because of a hangover, I had the bulletproof excuse, you know. I just didn't even... Actually, I never gave the excuse. I'm self-employed. I show up when I want to show up. Go figure. But that's what held me together a lot of those years, was I took pride in my work. I was a painter. That's tough to do in a small hometown. You got to pretend like you're not a drunk. All painters are drunks, right? Some judges are too. I didn't know that till I came to AA. But anyway, alcoholism is diplomatic, and that doesn't care who you are. And so anyway, I'm getting towards the end of my drinking, and I'm struggling in another relationship, and they were getting ready to, the other party was getting ready to come to Charlottesville area. So I kind of tagged along, tried to be helpful. And found an ad in one of the local papers. I think it was off of Avon Street. Still remember that. And I saw this ad for a place for sale. I said, that looks like a bait and switch to me. It just looks too good. So I took a look at it. Called a guy. Turns out we were talking about him tonight. Anyway, I called this guy. He's a real estate agent. And he said, meet me at his, he told me to meet him. And so I drove down and met him and went to the place where I'm now living. And I went in there. He took me in a garage. I walked up through there, unfinished. Came through the basement of the house, went upstairs. Came back out, and I turned to him and said, what do I need to do next? He said, come on over to my house. So I went over to his house, and I bought a house. Now, alcoholics aren't capable of buying a house, are they? Sure they are. I just don't think I'm an alcoholic. You know, now, shortly after that, I didn't think I was. But anyway, that's what I did. So I moved from a place where I'd been all my life, and people swore that Sage would never move from there because I liked it there. That's where I had all my fun. I knew practically everybody in the county. Knew every nook and cranny in most counties around there. I grew up there, etc. Great place to live. But anyway, so I came chasing this relationship, and it didn't really last very long. Nor did I. I thought the move would be good for me. I was sober 3 months after I moved here. And that's where my journey really began as far as having fun living. I didn't think that it was possible to actually have fun living without drinking. Because that's what I was faced with that first day. What happened was, this friend of mine, just out of the blue, we were still living together, and now I can't say that I'd gone out and crashed anything, or I stayed out all night, or, you know, I wasn't hiding or going away for 3 days. I wasn't the type to go away for 3 days. I just stayed out all night. But one day they up and said, Sage, I said, I think you need some help. And for whatever reason, I went, you make the call. And I still remember I said that. And at that time, if I remember right, what it was, I just am unhappy with my life. That's the only way I know how to describe it. It wasn't like, I can't go another day drinking, and I can't leave it alone. It didn't happen that way for me. I just drank all the fun out of drinking, although I was still drinking. Just absolutely tired. All the fun and all the glitter, all the excitement had left. I'd already become afraid to drive anywhere. I knew Route 20 would be a terrible idea to where I lived to come and drink. And I like bars. I like the noise and the fun and the fights. And you know, I like to watch that stuff. You know, I like to see them dance. I like to see them swing the pool sticks. I don't want to be involved in it. And sometimes my smart mouth would get me a sucker punch. You know, but or just being in the wrong place at the wrong time. That's what happens to a guy like me. I got this on 13 nights out in a row. So it's what a beer mug will do to you. And but anyway, I didn't know why I didn't have a clue why in the world anybody wants to keep count on how many days I'm out drinking in a row. And so I learned this in sobriety. I've been out drinking 13 nights in a row. I don't have a clue I'm doing that for 13 nights in a row. But anyway. So after I said you make the call, I guess she knew something, or I don't know what she knew, but anyway, Charlotte Behavioral Systems. That's here in Charlottesville. I went, I think that's it. Behavioral system. Yeah, it must be behavior. You know, I'm really thinking, I'm not even thinking drinking. I'm not thinking of alcoholism. I'm just thinking a change is due. So I go in there and I'm willing to be taken in for 28 days and they will not allow it. Must have not been drunk enough or something. That's not the way it really was. But anyway, they talked to me and came to the conclusion that I don't need detoxing, and then I could do an outpatient, and they were right. And I will say what they did for me is they had two good ideas that were good, and that was to go to AA meetings and get a sponsor. As I always have said, is I did some of that. That's the worst thing I can do. I was about to take an, I was getting ready to take an uncharted course with a shortcut. That's kind of one way to describe it. That's, in other words, I was going to try to figure this thing out and develop the idea on my own and then get out of here. You know, I think a lot of us do that. But anyway, when I went in there, they started to separate me up in different rooms because I did a lot of everything. And I was a little confused in the beginning. And it's really of no fault of theirs at all. They're just trying to be helpful, and that's what they do. And it's quite a bit of difference between a treatment center and Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcoholics Anonymous has only one program of recovery. It only has one, and that is the steps. That's the only thing we have. There are other avenues that people may have success at, and AA is really not interested in it per se. We just know what works for us, and so when I went to Charter, I'd announced myself as an alcoholic and an addict. I was just following what everybody else was doing, and I was helped immensely with that. When I came to the conclusion that I was an alcoholic, and I went up and talked to a guy who was going to be my sponsor and help me with that, and he asked me, I still remember today, he says, Sage, he says, you don't mind announcing yourself as an alcoholic, do you? And I says, no. And so that was 12 years ago. You know, I did those things alcoholically. They were enhancers, extenders. You know, I use pot quite a bit to get over a hangover and to maintain during the day. So controlling your drinking is no fun at all. Just trying to control it is no fun. I'll assure you that. I did it for a good part of 29 years. No fun. Maybe that's why I drank for 29 years. I'm never in control. I just think I am. And so that's why I used all those things. I used them alcoholically. So I'm glad I was helped with that. In the very beginning, I learned something really important, that I'm just really an alcoholic, and I have one problem, and there's one solution for me here. That's all we have to offer. And my sponsor helped me with that. So what happened was, I was sitting in AA meetings, probably down to about this, over a period of 6 months. I had a period of grace for 6 months where I didn't drink. And very difficult for people living around me. My girlfriend at the time had two sons, so they felt the brunt of it too. I'm just not happy when I'm not drinking. And that's a dry drunk. I heard about that from her. She knew something. So what happened was I was probably started out going to 2 to 3 meetings a week. I can remember that. Didn't have a sponsor. I had one guy that attached himself one time, but he didn't have any requirements of me. That doesn't work for me. I don't really see it working for other folks either. If there's if I don't have any requirements that I need to meet, then I'm just floating around in here. And I did that. I floated in AA for six months. Not a fun spot to be. I'm very anxious. I'm very irritated. I get really loud. And everything bothers me. Everything, you know. And I don't do well with that. So I'm sitting in these meetings and they're talking about jail. I knew the magistrate. I didn't go in jail. I got lucky every time. You know, I thought about it all those times. I just didn't get caught right, you know. Whether I was doing anything wrong, I just didn't get caught. I just don't like getting caught, you know. I don't like being wrong. I don't like being caught. And they were talking about not having a job or being unemployed. I said, man, I like working. They were talking about being disowned from the family. I sat right beside my father's bed and watched him die. He told me, he had already told me, he said, I'm proud of you. Boy, I must have fooled him. Got along good with my dad. I didn't really get along too great with my mother. For some reason. The reason is me, but anyway. May not have time to tell you about everything, but so I was looking at all these things. You know, I'm really not like you guys in here. This way I felt. I'm just not quite like everybody in here. And I haven't been disowned by my family. I've disappointed them. I just bought a house. I just started a LLC, started a business. I think that's right at when I got sober, but anyway. All these things that were in place in my life, therefore I'm not an alcoholic. And this guy at this meeting, I swear he was sitting across from me, but he says he was sitting beside me. But I heard him. He was talking about the easy stuff in here, all the stuff that I missed sitting in those meetings. He was talking about his drinking. One drink, two drinks, three drinks, lead to four, five, six, seven. Oh, yeah, I got that. I know, I've had that since I was a teenager. He called it an allergy. I have an allergy to, when I put this alcohol in my body, something happens to me and it requires another. Until the Virginia State Police, the Maryland Police, the gang, you name it, whoever it is, stops it. Or I run out of money, run out of time, or physically I can't put it in me anymore. Those are the only things that stop me from drinking. The doctors can stop me from drinking too, and that happened too. And he called that an obsession. You know, he was talking about the reason you return to drink again is because you have this thing in your mind that says that it's okay. Eventually. That's what happens to me when I don't drink for a while. Eventually, it becomes a good idea to drink. So that's how I drank all my life, from mid-morning till late afternoon. That obsession to drink is always returning. It always was. It always had been, no matter what. It was even returning after the doctor scared me. That obsession to drink always returns if you're an alcoholic. Not an alcoholic, you don't have to worry about it. Doctor scare you, never drink again, you're probably not alcoholic if you don't drink again. But what this guy said was that he could stop from time to time. And he had explained in whatever he was saying that he could stop. He gave some examples how he could stop. But he said he couldn't stay stopped entirely. Bingo. That's what I got. I got that part now. And so it was at that moment I learned that I was an alcoholic. Our literature talks about we learn to concede to our innermost selves that we're alcoholic. That's what happened to me. I learned this. Nobody pinned it on me. I learned it right in here. And it took me 6 months for that to happen. And so then... And then all those steps that were on the wall and that were being read to meetings didn't look so opposing to me. As a matter of fact, I wasn't even worried about them. If I remember right, what I remember was my sponsor. I didn't know he was going to be my sponsor, but right after the meeting, I went up to him and asked him, I said, I need some help. So he directed me outside and he got me alone so couldn't be disturbed or interrupted, etc. You know, which is very effective. I learned that. And from him, as I've learned everything by watching and not doing it right at least once. And that's how I learn. I learn by mistake. And so anyway, I get with him, and he asked me a series of questions, five or six questions, and very simple questions, really about my drinking. And he said, well, you've just done the first three steps. When do you want to feel better? And I said, right now. It's really not about feeling better, but that's what I said. And so he set me up, and that was on a Saturday. I met him, and I had a fifth step by the following Sunday. It was either Sunday or Monday. I did my fifth step with him. And within 9 days, I had a men's list. So that's how I was sprung up here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I believe that's why I'm here tonight, as I had a good foundation. He required that I go to four AA meetings a week. That's a commitment. That means commitment's a commitment. That means I'm there. That means anything else. Just means I'm there. Doesn't mean whether I feel like it or not. It means I'm there. So for the last 12 years, I've been at those four AA meetings. There hasn't been anything that stopped me. Two migraine headaches in 12 years. Pretty good. That was the first couple of years. I had some few headaches early on. Haven't had any since. I haven't even thrown up in 12 years. But anyway, I had to meet some requirements. And, you know, it might be basically trying to find my willingness, but I believe if anybody wants to do AA, you can just feed him right with a spoon. He'll just go right there. All you got to do is give it to him. He'll do it. If he concedes to his innermost self that he's alcoholic, I think that's the key. That's the key, I believe. But anyway, you know, he said, this is your home group. And my home group is the Buckingham Big Book Group. Meets on Tuesday night. And he says, you need to have a job there. So I've always had a job. You know, you have to, there's a lot of other requirements, but that's a broad brush of initially what I had to do. And what the commitments, I believe, there's an old saying in here in AI here. It says, meeting makers make it, and I'll shake my head for that. That's all fine. But I like to change that and say that commitment makers make it here. I think that's the vital key right there is, if I've done anything right, if I made those, I made that commitment 12 years, nearly 12 years ago, that puts me in all the meetings that I should go to, and then some, and it puts me here tonight. You know, I learned early on that if AA asks me to do something and that night's open, then I'm there. I always go to this is like my sixth or seventh AA meeting this week. It's a great time to go to an AA meeting. You're around a lot of folks, you know, you're like me. I can get disturbed easy, but I like to nip it off at the bud. I've been unemployed now for about 3 or 4 weeks. You know, it's good to go to a couple more extra AA meetings a week so I see that I don't have it so bad. You know, I get to drive up through Charlottesville and see that I don't have it so bad, et cetera. But anyway, kind of keeps me in the right space that I need to be in. But that's some of the most important things that I started with here in AA. Number one was a sponsor. And pretty much with no debate. I debate them in my mind sometimes. You know, I learned a lot of things through sponsorship that have been absolutely valuable in my sobriety, even though they're really not listed, so to speak, in the steps in a roundabout way they are. One way I look at it is considered behavior. That's in a roundabout way. My sponsor taught me almost right away what being on time was. That's one of a very valuable spiritual principle is to be on time. I assure you that. Just think about, I'll just tell you my experience. When I drive down the road and I'm late, I'm not spiritual. Okay? That's an easy one. So if I leave early, I'm never bothered by slow traffic. I'm never bothered by a flat tire. I've had flat tires going to A meetings. I'll still get there early. I allow plenty of time to get here tonight. In case there's a rock slide, mud slide, bridges out, I don't know what's going to happen. Maybe an ill-maintained truck. I don't know. And that's what I've learned here. I never get bent out of shape because I'm late. I had to learn that here. My sponsor taught me that. I was to meet him at 7 o'clock and ride to the meeting as we always did early on when he lived in a certain area. It was just like clockwork. But anyway, I got there. It was 2 minutes after 7, 3 minutes after. I said, yeah, I know where I can get to that meeting quick before he does. If I go that other road, I bet you I can get there before he does. I'm going to prove him wrong. I'm going to make like I was there on time. When I got to the meeting, he was already there, so I couldn't say a whole lot. And he said, Sage, where were you? I said, I came to your house at 7 o'clock. He says, 7 o'clock, you weren't there, I left. He says, you were late. Man, the first 45 minutes sitting in the AA meeting, I was mad as a hornet at him. When I left that meeting, he was right. Might have been a couple days later, he was right. I was late. I ain't been late since, I don't think. Anyway, remember I was talking about all the marriages I had, that never really happened, but I'm married to my wife who is in recovery in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she pretty much does the same thing I do, and I'm glad it's that way. I don't think it has to be that way for everybody, certainly not. But, boy, it's really great when two folks are together, even in an AA meeting, when two folks are together. And no matter what comes along the way, I know a way out. You know, and that's the way it's always been, since I've been in AA, is having a way out of whatever's going on. And it's really the whole package here that makes it all doable. It was instilled upon me through my sponsor. Is no matter how I feel or what I think, I just need to do the things that I need to do to stay sober. And he had taught me all of those. So he kind of made it very simple for me. He said all the things that sounded corny to me in the beginning are not corny now. You know, like you need to show somebody else how to do this, or you need to get out of yourself. You know, all those things were foreign concepts to me. I don't know how to do any of that. I don't know how to go over there and talk to that new guy over there. But I had to learn how to do that. I watched my sponsor. I used to follow him real close. I was like right at earshot, maybe 6 feet from him, following around like a puppy dog. I don't know how to talk to anybody. I don't like to be in front of people. I quit college class because I had to get up in front of some people. A group about this size here, I quit the class. I was scared. So a lot of things have changed. When I went to that treatment center at Charter, my sponsor got a hold of me. I showed up at that meeting like I did at all the meetings. I had a pair of hunting boots on, a pair of jeans, a knife on my side. I think I used to say I had a hat for every meeting. I had a beard, bloodshot eyes, gray face, unshaven. And that's how I came to AA. And full of fear. Wasn't successful in any relationships in all my life. Never had any confidence in what I was doing. Felt like I was a fake. Felt like I was inadequate. Sometimes I still can. Came in here full of misery and depression. AA, their big book describes me pretty good. Unhappy with life. It wasn't my circumstances at all. Really. Just unhappy. I can be unhappy if I'm employed. I can be unhappy if I own a house. Believe me, it's just as dark and unhappy, no matter what I have. I think sobriety is something that happens on the inside. Has to be a change within me, or I'm not going to make it here. And the only thing that I've seen that works for me is what we have here. And it's not as hard as I thought it was. We were talking before the meeting, or there was some conversation about it, but there may be a lot of fear attached to the steps. There's no reason to have any fear about the steps. All of them are very easy. None of them require any perfection. There's always some stigma surrounding the fourth step. Fourth step is really about obstacles in our path. That's all it really is. A lot of mystique about the fourth step. I'm a guy who had a sponsor show me how to do the fourth step right out of the big book. I did one 12 years ago. I think I did one 2 years later. I think I did one 5 years later. I think I've done one in the last year. That's it. That doesn't sound right, does it? I don't know if it sounds right or not. I believe that if I follow what my sponsor suggests, and so far I've done that, and he wants me to stay busy in AA. He wants me to reach out and help other alcoholics. So that's what I do. I work with a lot of alcoholics. I don't necessarily sponsor them all. But I work with a lot of alcoholics, and that requires going to a lot of AA meetings. Well, that's where the pudding is here. It's because I'm not thinking about myself. And I think there's a little bit of, around that four step that some folks, even folks that I know, they look at themselves so closely that they don't have time to be thinking about anybody else. And that's really their object here, is to be helping others. So I'm a guy that doesn't stay in inventory. I'm a guy who follows through the steps and then maintains what I've learned to do here, and then it becomes automatic. All this inventory stuff becomes built in. I'm aware of that stuff. I'm aware when Sage is wrong, he feels guilty. It's automatic. I got a conscience now. It grows here. What a great thing to have. I got a thing that kicks in that gets me back in the right path here. And I don't have to focus on myself. We call it navel gazing. That's what it's called. And I'm so glad that I have a sponsor that doesn't keep me engaged in such a focus on step procedure and the mechanics of the steps that I miss what's going on here. It's really about showing up and having fun, trying to help another alcoholic for free and for fun. And once I started doing that, then that's when I stopped working on Sage. You know, I used to work on stuff like how not to react. And I'm not capable of not doing that. I have to do this over here and my life changes, so. Gosh, I wish I had more time, and good thing that's tape. Y'all can take it home and replay it and chop it up and get it all in the right order, and maybe you can make some sense out of it. I'm out of time, and thank you. You can thank Billy that there is a man here tonight, and I'm not dressed in women's clothes, even though it's supposed to have been a women's speaker meeting, I understand. So when Billy gets back, tell him to keep coming back. His perception of Sage will change. I just saw him last week. I was dressed like a man. Yeah. Thank you.